I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. The Labor Department reported this morning that another 6.6 million Americans file for unemployment benefits, and that's on top of the 3.3 million people who filed claims reported last week. We'll be talking about how to address the needs of the unemployed tomorrow on Radio Times. Today on the show, working from home. About a third of the U.S. population, that's 100 million people, are using their kitchen counters, their dining room tables, a corner of their bedrooms, their closets to do their jobs while dealing with the stress of the pandemic. It's complicated working remotely and staying connected. And with schools closed, parents are trying to figure out how to juggle their children's emotional and educational needs with their responsibilities to their employer without burning out. Meanwhile, employers and supervisors are trying to figure out how to do their jobs when their staff is under stay-at-home orders. So today on Radio Times, some ideas, some suggestions on how to stay focused and productive, how to juggle the multitude of tasks when everyone is under stay-at-home orders. And we have two guests who have joined us. Stuart Friedman is an organizational psychologist at the Wharton School. He founded Wharton's Leadership Program and its Work-Life Integration Project. He's co-author with Alyssa Westring of a new book called Parents Who Lead. Stuart Friedman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And also with us and joining us by telephone, Barbara Larson. She is Executive Professor of Management at Northeastern University. Her research focuses on remote and virtual work. And Barbara Larson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be here, Marty. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And to our listeners, if you are working for home, how is it going? Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. Excuse me. Let me begin with you, Stuart, but Barbara, I want to make sure that we get a response from you as well. This all happened so suddenly. We are all working from home, the three of us, as are apparently millions of other people. And I think working from home when it's by choice is one thing, but working from home when it's really by law, by directive, is something completely different. And Stuart, I just wonder, how are we supposed to be feeling these days?
Well, I think it's normal and expected that people would feel anxious and afraid because these are uncertain times. And there is lack of clarity as to when these restrictions will be eased and when we'll have more freedom of movement and can move into another phase of our collective life that hopefully involves more time together in person. So I think it's, again, just something that is useful to keep in mind that if you're feeling scared, that's okay, and that's normal. The big question, of course, especially for those who have child care or elder care responsibilities, you know, people who depend on you, despite the fear, to still have some sense of hope or optimism about a better tomorrow. And that is indeed the heart of courage and leadership, is to accept the fear that you have, the anxieties that you have, and still find some reason for hope and optimism.
And I want to pick up on all of that. Barbara, let me give you a chance to weigh in on just the predicament, that's not even the strongest word I could think of, but the predicament that so many people feel that they're in working from home and feeling so disconnected from the people that they work with and even just sort of disconnected from the life that they used to have.
Yeah, I think I'll say two things here. I think that, you know, I've been studying remote work and virtual work now for probably 7 years, and I've been saying to everybody that I talk to these days, you know, this is not normal remote work. So, you know, the normal rules don't apply. Now, the normal rules can be helpful for sure, but they don't apply. And one of the number one things that I've been saying to, you know, when I talk to managers, to companies in my writing lately, have been, you know, managers and companies need to understand. I mean, my biggest fear is that there will be companies who have been on the fence about remote work and think, oh, this is a great opportunity to experiment with remote work. And no, it's the worst possible time to experiment with remote work because you can't have any of the, you know, very few of the structures in place that you normally would. I think in terms of the times, I think that one of the points that Stu made near the end of what he said was really important also for people who are managing remote workers right now in this, as you say, predicament,
right.
Which is that it's important to acknowledge the situation and the difficulty of what's going on. But then beyond that, in order to really lead, you have to provide structure for these workers and support. And so I think, you know, trying to achieve that balance right now is really critical.
And I want to pick up on all of that as well. Stuart, let me go back to you. And I'm even thinking of the title of the book that you have co-authored, Parents Who Lead. How much is of being a manager is like being a parent, that you need some of the same kinds of skills?
Well, surprisingly, quite a lot. When you think about the leadership challenge that working parents face, you see a lot of analogies and ways that you can use the science of leadership to bring that to bear in the art of parenting. That's what we've tried to do in this book, using evidence-based knowledge on how to do that. For example, one of the critical features of effective leadership is to have a vision of the future that is better than today, that is based on the reality of today, a clear picture of what is actually happening right now. And in light of that, a compelling image of an achievable future, something that's out there in the future that moves your heart, that is realistic, and that you can see. So one of the exercises that we have in the book that anybody can do, really, you don't have to be a working parent, but it's helpful for working parents and partners in parenting to do this together, is to sketch out what does a day in your life look like way out in the future, say 15 years from now. What's an ideal day look like? What do you do in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, and with whom? And most importantly, why are you doing what you're doing? What's the impact that you're having, the legacy that you're creating?
I understand that. I think, sure, but I think that at this point, people are not thinking. We don't know. I mean, it feels like the future feels so uncertain. So it's hard to imagine our lives in 15 years. I think it's really thinking today, tomorrow, next week, maybe May in the most sort of distant future that we can imagine.
I know. Yes, of course. And this is the great challenge of leadership that anyone with a little practice can do. If you have a picture of where you're going, you have a greater sense of purpose, stability in times of tumultuous change like we are all experiencing now, that gives you a kind of ground to get a little bit of control over what seems like an uncontrollable and overwhelming and highly stress-inducing and exhausting situation, which is the one we're in now. To get past that, to work through that day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, it's useful, and this is one of the ideas that we have from the science of leadership, to have a picture of a better tomorrow. And being able to actually say what that picture looks like and to describe it to people around you, like your family, like your kids, like your boss, like the people who matter to you, that gives you a greater sense of optimism and control over, all right, well, now what small step can I take right now, today, that's going to help me take movement towards that better tomorrow. When you do that consciously and intentionally and deliberately to move in a direction that you choose because it's good for you and the people that you care about, which is what leaders do, you feel better and you're able to make smarter decisions in the near term, in
Barbara,
the day-to-day.
Sure, I appreciate that. And Barbara, let me go back to you. And I even asked some very sort of basic questions, thinking from the, you know, the employee, the worker's point of view. How do you suggest they structure their day? Now, as you say, people that choose to work remotely, that's a whole different set of experiences. But at the same time, we can probably learn from some of that to apply under today's pandemic, you know, anxieties.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think a lot of what we normally would see in remote work best practices can be applied, just with the understanding that, you know, you probably aren't shooting for perfection right now. But I think a couple of pieces of just very tactical advice. There's been a lot of writing about this lately. Certainly having some kind of a routine, having a structure to your day and to your kids' day, you know, as well as for many of us, including myself, who have kids at home now, having that schedule. When my son's school closed, the first thing that we did was put together a written schedule of the day and what it was going to look like. It varies a little bit day by day, but that has given both of us a sense of intentionality about the day and also just the ability to plan. That's very much true for remote work as well, particularly in these times. I think another thing that I have been advocating for a lot these days under the circumstances is regular check-ins. This can be done, mm-hmm. For some people it makes sense to do this every day, first mm-hmm. thing in the morning with their supervisor, their manager. For other people who tend to work more autonomously, professors being a good example, we tend to work fairly autonomously, independently. In my faculty group, we're doing a weekly check-in. But for many people, a daily 10-15 minute morning check-in via Zoom, with your manager is a really good way to kind of signal to yourself that the day has started. And I think the other thing is to be very intentional about negotiating a work schedule, both with your company, with your boss, but also if you have a partner at home, with your partner. And I know Stu can talk more about that part of it, but I think that, I have a friend who is currently, she's got three small children at home. She and her husband both work full time. She's working basically 7 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, and then she takes over the kids, and he works from 2 until 8 or 9 at night. Right. And so, things like that are part of the structure in today's time.
Stuart, we're almost up on a break here, but do you suggest people, if they're working from home, that they get dressed as if they are going to work?
a lot of people find that helpful. I saw Stephen Colbert the other night saying, why he wears a suit for his, at-home, shows. And it's just because he doesn't look good in a T-shirt. But there are probably some other reasons to sort of define the boundary of, okay, this is work time. I'm putting on my work, uniform or costume. It's just to signal that this is now the, what I'm going to be focusing on. I think anything that helps people to create meaningful boundaries between the work role that they're in versus the family role that they're in is going to be helpful. Now, some people find that changing clothes helps you to do that.
Right.
Not everybody does. I don't think there's any hard and fast rule there. I think the big idea is be clear about what you're doing now and what you're not doing so that you can try to have some semblance of boundaries and focus.
Well, we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about making working at home work. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Millions of American workers are under orders to stay home, to work from home. And we're talking about how to share a workspace with spouses and partners and kids and roommates and pets, and how to stay on task when things just feel so stressful and so out of control. Talking with Stuart Friedman, he's an organizational psychologist at the Wharton School, co-author of a new book called Parents Who Lead. Barbara Larson with us as well. She's professor of management at Northeastern University, where her research focuses on remote and virtual work. And you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And again, you can always leave a comment on our Facebook page as well. In fact, we have a comment from Annabelle from our Facebook page. She said, I thought working from home every day would be something I would enjoy, but it's become a drag. I haven't left my house in about 6 days. I'm introverted, but even I am becoming stir crazy. An email from Denise. I know what my 9-year-old grandchild needs: routine, guidance with school work, exercise, some shielding from coronavirus news, consistent bedtime. I've been able to accomplish none of the of the above. It's a free-for-all. And I think both Denise and Annabelle are really speaking for so many people. And Barbara, I just wonder for perhaps all of us to give ourselves a bit of a break. Yes, it's important to have routine, but we can't be perfect parents under these circumstances.
That's right. I think you want to think about routine as when I say that, you know, we put together a written schedule, that has been very helpful, but there are many days when, you know, things happen, right? And so I think it's better to think of it as kind of scaffolding or a skeleton. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, for the people, you know, who say, well, none of this has happened. Yeah, maybe none of that has happened, right? But you are providing your child care and love and you're there. And that's huge. And I think that, you know, we have to keep all of this in perspective. There are lots of specific things that you can do to increase the level of, you know, kind of stability and smoothness with which your day goes on. But at the end of the day, if you can't accomplish all of that, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Give yourself a break and realize that, you know, providing consistent love and to the extent that you're able, a sense of stability and, you know, that this will work itself out. I think that's far more important than any, you know, of the other tactics that we talk about.
Stuart, founded the Wharton Work-Life Integration Project, and I think even under the best of circumstances, especially for parents, that work-life balance is really difficult under even normal circumstances. And here we are trying to do the same thing under these extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, it's really tough now as the physical boundaries between work and family have just disappeared. So that makes it even more important for people to do just what Barbara was suggesting, and that is to talk with the people who matter to you, your kids, your partner, your colleagues at work, about what you need from each other in terms of attention and focus. So that, for example, if you've got a business meeting that you've got to do on Zoom and, you know, your kids are flying around in the background, now that's normal. Everybody's cool with that because it's happening everywhere. At the same time, depending on your kid's age, you could say to them, you know, this is what I'm doing now over the next hour. These are the people who I'm talking to. This is why it's important to us that I'm doing this. I mean, you don't have to go on for hours and hours about this, just a minute. Here's why I'm doing what I'm doing, and here's what would help me help our family to do the work that I need to do to help protect us. Does that make sense to you, kids? Okay, great. Here's how you can help. And similarly with your boss, you can say, this is what is going to be helpful to me if I'm, you know, not available between noon and two. Here's how that's going to make me a more valuable asset to our team, what we're trying to do together to salvage our business. Does that make sense to you, dear boss? How does that sound to you? Would that work for you? Can we try that for a week and see how it works? So in both cases, you're trying to help the people around you understand the boundaries that you need to be able to focus and why it's good for them so that they can support you in doing that.
You know, it's so interesting. I was thinking for so many kids, parents leave their house when they go to work. And so work is this mysterious thing that the grown-ups do. But now children are getting to see a version, I would say, of what it is that their parents do when they go off to, quote unquote, work, Stuart.
Yeah. And so it's a great opportunity, really, for parents to help their kids understand what they do and why they do it and, you know, the purpose of their work and what it means to them and to help their children understand better that aspect of their lives. Of course, depending on their ages, you know, these have to be age appropriate conversations, but they can be really quite enriching and bring families together. And we're seeing all kinds of stories like that, on social media and in print journalism that we're observing families doing things together that help them see the fuller picture of who their parents are, who their kids are. And I think that's a great benefit and should be used as an opportunity for people to learn more about, you know, for kids to see, here's what I do. What questions do you have about it? does it seem strange that I would be getting paid for just sitting talking to some people on a screen?
The cat's out of the bag there, right?
Exactly.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah, go ahead, Barbara. Girl, yeah, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, I hear that versions of that last comment a lot from my 12-year-old. But you know, how is it that you're getting paid for sitting and talking on video calls? Yeah, but
Barbara, let me pick up on something you said. Yeah, of course. As a university professor, sort of, you know, many working, and I think there are a lot of jobs that are in many ways kind of solo jobs, but there are a lot of jobs that involve teamwork where you really do need, I mean, to be honest with you, the producers who produce this show, we have to work as a team. Otherwise, this show does not get on the air. How do you suggest under these remote circumstances that we support and build teamwork?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, right? Because, that's a tough question because the research that we have on remote work and productivity, the relationship between remote work and productivity is positive, but has only been done on very independent types of jobs, not on jobs like the ones you're talking about that are highly collaborative. And, you know, the suspicion is, although the work hasn't been done there yet, the suspicion is that those jobs, you know, productivity is more likely, we assume that productivity is more likely to suffer. Now, what can you do to manage that? Obviously, this is one place where technology is huge. We've seen the rise of Zoom in the last few weeks. But there are other platforms as well that can really help regular, consistent communication in an easy way. What I often recommend to managers and companies is that there be a combination of different types of media available to employees that do a lot of collaborative work. The three pieces that I would say are the most important are having one type that is very rich, meaning a lot of information gets shared, and Zoom would be a good example of that, you know, video conferencing. Right. Then to have one that is not that rich, but is very real-time, easy to use, and easy to respond. And a great example of that would be Slack, where, you know, there's a mobile app. You can have it on your phone. People can communicate back and forth very easily. There are different channels, it's very easy to organize a lot of informal chatting on something like Slack. And then in the middle is, you know, our good old-fashioned email. And I really, you know, discourage people running collaborative jobs over email. It's actually not a great way to collaborate. It's a great way to share a lot of data or a lot of writing. But in terms of getting, you know, real-time, quick back and forth collaboration and maintaining the other thing that's important with collaboration, sorry, just one more point here, is managing a sense of social cohesion within the team. And again, their email is probably about the worst medium that we have for that, because things can get misconstrued so easily over email. So it's really having that range and then using it. And then as leaders in particular, modeling the behavior by establishing what we're going to do, when we're going to use this technology, and then as a leader, doing it yourself.
What about phone calls? I mean, talk about good old fashioned, like a phone call. Where, how does that fit in there? I miss those.
Yeah,
I miss the person to person conversations. And I think a lot of, a lot of spontaneous interactions and things like that is very creative, but it also, you know, makes this sense of cohesion that we're all in this together. Do you want to take that, Stuart? Yeah, do you want to take that, Stuart?
Sure. I think that's a great point, Marty. What I have found just personally over this last couple of weeks is that there's more spontaneity in contact among people as we've become more atomized, you know, separated and isolated physically. There's been a growing sense of social connection through these virtual media, including phone and Zoom. So I think I'm spending more time hanging out with friends on Zoom than I used to spend, in the pre-pandemic era, because it's just a lot harder to make a connection, to set up a time to be together, in person, and phone has sort of dropped off as an important medium, for connection. And text has replaced it, but now Zoom is here. And so what I'm seeing and observing and hearing from my friends and family is that they're spending a lot more time interacting with each other, even though it's through this two-dimensional visual space of Zoom or Skype or whatever it is. So I think there's a greater interest in spontaneous communication, and it's been made somewhat easier because we're forced to make it happen.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Stuart Friedman, Barbara Larson with us as well. And we are talking about working from home, how to make it work, and something like 100 million people, a large portion of the U.S. population, are working from home, ordered to do so because of the pandemic. And we want to find out if working from home is working for you. We want to know how it's going. Any advice, stories, comments that you have, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Greg says, I'm a therapist and I'm advising clients and friends to practice what we can control. Wash your hands. Mm-hmm. Don't touch your face. Stay physically distant but emotionally close with those we love. And always remember that, quote, this too shall pass. And I think that's really good advice. Let me ask you both about the sort of non-work things that happen at the workplace. And there's the gossip. And there's the, there's just the time that we spend chatting with each other. And how do we make that happen when I think a lot of these remote conversations are about we need to get this done, we need to get that done. Is there room for something more sociable than that, Barbara?
Absolutely. And this is a best practice even for sort of normal remote work. It's important to create space for social interaction, which is basically any interaction that's not about work itself. And, we've been saying this, we know this from years of research. And what has been really encouraging to me to see so far in this pandemic, and this is just anecdotally, mm-hmm. is that people really are doing this in the workplace. I think that historically, it has been much more the job of either the remote worker or a team leader to create this space, either by saying, we're going to have 5 or 10 minutes at the beginning to chat just about, life and how things are going.
You know what, we're going to need to fix Barbara's phone line. It's breaking up there. Stuart Friedman, let me get you then to respond to that. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say something quite similar to what Barbara was saying, and that is, a real simple thing to do that I generally do and that I see other people do and I counsel them to do is to start with a check-in. If you've got a half hour to meet with four people, you might say, okay, how about if we spend 5 minutes at the beginning just getting a minute from each one of us on how the heck things are going in this crazy world today? John, do you want to start? And so you just a check-in on life is a good way to begin with it being time-bound, because otherwise, you could eat up the entire, allotted time for just talking about all the craziness and anxieties and fears that people are experiencing and the strange things that are happening in their lives. So I recommend that highly, and it can often lead to a further conversation, on a one-on-one basis when you hear something from someone that you want to follow up on. So absolutely that social cohesion that Barbara referred to, that sense of, we're connected to each other as human beings, is really important. And I would recommend you start every meeting with something like that.
Yeah, just to find out essentially how people are doing. What about people who are just don't do remote working very well? Barbara, and I believe you are back with us, but whether they're just the distractions of the job or they're just something about their personality doesn't really fit with this kind of remote working. Maybe they get bored. Maybe they get lonely. What advice do you have them under today's circumstances?
I mean, honestly, the best advice I could give is just recognize that, and be okay with it, is the best non-technical wording I can use for that. I think recognizing it, you know, being conscious of that, but then not letting it define you, you know, and saying, okay, this, you know, this kind of stinks. This is not my optimal work environment, but I'm going to do the best that I can within, you know, in these circumstances. I think it can also help to think about the efforts that you're making right now as part of a larger whole, right? That we're all, you know, this is kind of a war effort, right? We're all trying to do the right thing to keep each other safe, to keep the economy going as much as we can, and to each contribute in our own way. And so I think that viewing, you know, I think the key for people like that who are really struggling is to, you know, accept that struggle to a certain degree and then say, okay, within that, I'm going to do the best that I can and not become a victim to it. And then I'm going to accept whatever that best is and look forward to getting back to the office.
What do you think, Stuart?
I think that's great advice in that, you know, compassion starts with the self, right? As we were discussing at the beginning, the importance of, like, you're not going to be perfect. Letting go of some of the standards that you hold for yourself and for your kids and for your coworkers, and being a bit more relaxed in understanding first for yourself that you can't do everything that you used to be able to do. And that then, you know, translates into you having a more accepting and sort of loving attitude towards other people. That's just going to make it so much easier for everybody to feel okay about doing whatever they can do. And at the same time, as Barbara was saying, this notion of our all being part of one human family, that we're all connected, which this virus so vividly, you know, displays for us, you know, that we are one. I think that's a really big idea. And one of the things that we've been doing in our family is to rewatch Carl Sagan's Cosmos series from the 70s.
Stuart, I got to jump in here only because we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about how to work remotely, stay connected under the stay at home and don't go to work orders that are affecting something like 100 million people in this country. We're talking about how to be productive and focused, how to juggle the needs of your kids when everyone is stuck at home, how to take care of your mental health and other people's mental health as well, as if you're a parent or if you're a supervisor, a boss, an employer, an employee. And again, Barbara Larson from Northeastern University and Stuart Friedman from the Wharton School are our guests. And we want to hear from you to find out how you are doing. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. Stuart, you were talking about, in rather inspiring philosophical terms, about that there, you know, it's easy to focus on all the difficulties of this pandemic, yeah. And they are many, but that it's important to think about us on the other side of this, and if we can learn some things about ourselves and even about our human species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an aspect of what leaders do, right? They face reality, and then they imagine a realistic picture of a better tomorrow, and how we are in this together. And this is what I'm hearing from and talking with students and clients about these days. You know, what is it that brings us together? Why are we doing what we're doing? You know, great teamwork and great leadership doesn't happen by magic. You have to make it happen. And the good news is that anybody can. You know, to be a leader is to bring people together to move to a better tomorrow as a collective, as a group. And you do that by stepping back and looking at, well, what binds us? What brings us together? Why are we doing what we're doing? And you don't have to spend a long time on that. You can do that in 15 seconds. Here's what we're doing together, and down to, you know, a specific meeting. Here's why we're together today. Here's why it matters. To be as clear as you can about the direction that you're headed in and why it matters. That really helps people to get focused and to get energized to be doing what it is that they need to do together. So to just simply identify, here's our purpose, here's why we're doing what we're doing, here's why each one of us matters in making a better tomorrow possible, That really makes a difference, and anyone can do it. You don't have to be a manager to do that. You can be anyone.
Barbara, I'm thinking about the fact that when people go to work, they put in their 8 hours, then they go home. But when you're working at home, is it really about the time that you put in, or is it about the task that needs to be accomplished?
I'm going to say it depends on the job, right? There are jobs for which it is the time that you put in. If you're a customer service representative, for instance, obviously the results of your work are also important, but there will be expectations around the time that you are working. For many of us, though, it is much more about the task. And in fact, in general, in sort of normal remote work times, we often advise companies as part of developing their remote work policies to establish expectations for remote workers that are results oriented rather than time oriented, if that's possible. And and certainly at this point, again, I think, you know, so many people are working so many different schedules in order to be able to get work done that if at all possible, it should be about the results.
Americans are, when you look at taking vacations, taking time off, Stuart, often don't use all their vacation days that they earn or they are allotted to, if they're lucky enough to get that, to get those benefits. And I wonder, are we workaholics in this country by nature, by necessity? And I'm wondering how that sort of fits into our larger discussion today. That we might be driving ourselves really, really hard at home.
Yeah, I mean, Americans are unique in that way, where we invest more in our work identities and who we are, and our success at work is defining, you know, our success as human beings more than most other countries. And there's a lot of harmful consequences to that. And one of the hopes that I have for what's happening here, and I see it with students, with clients, with others that I speak to these last couple of weeks especially, is a greater sense of understanding about what really matters in life. And one of the consequences of that is that people are coming to realize that teachers, childcare providers, healthcare workers are really, really valuable human beings in our society and should be respected and, of course, paid more. My youngest child is a 26-year-old teacher in Boston, and I think one of the outcomes of this experience that I hope comes to pass is that teachers will be respected more and indeed paid more because of the incredible service that they provide, and that, you know, so many working parents right now are figuring out, oh my God, how do these teachers do it?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. There's a lot of positive consequences that could come out of this, if we start to focus more on, you know, what really matters and how are we spending our time together and what's the legacy that we're creating in our lives, in terms of the relationships that we have with each other, including the people that we work with. And I see that happening now in the companies that I'm speaking to. People have a greater sense of appreciation and accommodation for and interest in the lives of the people around them and what they can do to be supporting each other. And that's a good trend.
Barbara, I'm just curious, picking up on what Stuart just said there. So what can companies do? What can supervisors, bosses, CEOs, what can they do then to support their workers under these really extraordinary circumstances?
I think that, as we've already said, I think modeling the behavior that, yourself, that you want to see in your workforce. So if you want there to be a high level of communication and collaboration and social support, then you need to be providing that as a top leader. I think, you know, the extent to which we see those behaviors coming out of senior leadership, that then, you know, trickle down or flow down through the rest of the organization. I think that's probably number one. You know, number two is, providing the technology platforms. I mean, I hate to move away from the psychology here, but certainly facilitating these behaviors as much as possible. And then also praising good examples of support when you see it in your company. if you have a manager that's doing a particularly good job of pulling their team together, supporting members who may be struggling or suffering. I want to point out one other thing. You began this hour, Marty, by saying, you know, that we're now at nearly 10 million people claiming unemployed benefits.
That's right.
That also means that in addition to having children at home, you know, pets at home, you know, working spouses, many people now have non-working spouses and may be experiencing, you know, economic insecurity in addition to trying to get their own jobs done. So I think, you know, the more that top leadership can praise the efforts of managers who are being aware of this and being supportive, you know, that sets the tone for the whole company.
I would think, too, even if you have a job, being worried that will I have a job in the future, or perhaps, you know, my pay is going to get cut by 50%. I mean, these are all, you know, unanswered questions at this point. But Barbara, I'm assuming many people are, even if they are employed, are worried about being unemployed.
I think you're right, Marty. I think at this point, for most people, unless you're, you know, perhaps, well, I was going to say unless you're perhaps a healthcare provider, but then I saw on social media this morning a report of a hospital that's cut its staff's pay by 50% because of a financial, you know, because they're now going into a financial crisis. So it's, I'm not sure that anybody's immune at this point.
You know, Stuart, you're talking about keeping our eye on the future and thinking in positive terms. But even more practically, I mean, if this goes on all the shutdowns from the pandemic and then all the public health worries that we have, if this goes on for weeks or even months and we're all at home, and yes, we might be doing okay under today's circumstances, but how do we prevent things like this sense of isolation or loneliness or even something like depression?
Yeah, I think it's unavoidable that we're going to see all kinds of mental health problems emanating, you know, coming out of this. And as I think it was Greg, the therapist who wrote or called in earlier, spoke to the idea of, excuse me, taking care of yourself is so critically important, because you can't take care of other people if you're yourself falling apart. I think it starts with that. And then doing what you can to be helpful to other people that, you know, whatever under your control. We know this from the great literature of you know, people who have survived prisoners of war from, you know, the 40s and 50s. What we know is that the people who did the best in surviving those horrific conditions were those who found some way, even if it was just carving off a little slice of a corner of a piece of moldy bread to be able to give it to somebody else and to help them, that those people who found a will to be helpful to other people, even in some teeny tiny way, they had a better chance of survival. So helping other people in whatever way you can is a key to surviving these very terrible and trying times. And so whatever you can do to find a way to do that is going to give you a greater sense of meaning and purpose and a will to continue.
Do you see that, Barbara, as well?
I do. And I just want to go back to your, I think it was your very first commenter, Annabelle, said something that really resonated with me. She said, I thought I was going to love working from home. I'm an introvert, but at this point I'm just miserable. And yes, I mean, you know, in fact, there's research that suggests that introverts do tend to do better with working from home. But that's when, you know, those are people who can go to Starbucks and sit in a cafe, or who can, you know, who can get out for, you know, go out shopping or go see a neighbor. And this is not the situation that we're in now. And so I think that, you know, as Stuart said, I think that finding, you know, if you're not already, you know, really bogged down helping others in your household and your family, certainly finding ways to reach out to other people and help as you can. If you are helping others extensively and intensively, then I think the focus should be more on taking care of yourself and doing what you need to do to carve out a little bit of time for yourself. And, you know, go out for a walk and talk to people from, you know, six or more feet away and in your neighborhood would be one example of that.
The idea of giving yourself a break.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And you said yes, Stuart, with great emphasis.
I did because, I mean, it's a point we've noted a few times in this conversation, and I'm glad we have because I think it's crucial. So many people are feeling overwhelmed and under stress because they feel like they're failing to deliver, whether it's to their kids, their partner, their boss, extended family, whomever. But lowering expectations and getting really clear about what the people around you actually need from you, what we have found in our research, this is 20 years plus now, is that when you ask people, here's what I think you really need from me now, is this accurate? What you find is that what other people expect of you is less than what you had thought. And that relieves pressure and makes you feel a little bit better. So I would strongly suggest that people get clear as much as they can. It doesn't have to take a long time. Here's what I think is important to you now, boss. Do I have it right? And what you're going to find is that you've got more support and love surrounding you than you had thought, if you're like most people.
Barbara, that's very interesting that people think that others have greater expectations of them than they have of themselves. Have you found that as well in your work?
I mean, that's not an area that I research per se. I was actually relieved myself to hear that.
think, Me too.
I think I'm going to go and have that conversation with a few people pretty soon. I appreciate it. Yeah, definitely.
Well, it seems under these sort of remote circumstances that if we're really intentional, perhaps I'll put this to you, Barbara, if we're really intentional and direct and kind of careful with what we say, especially if we're working with people, that can really go a long way.
Absolutely. And this is, when my sound started fading earlier, this was sort of what I was talking about when I was talking about social interaction and social cohesion. And I suspect that Stuart filled in the gaps there. But I think that, we are seeing that. I mean, I'm seeing people step up in at our university with each other as individuals in ways that I don't think I've ever seen at the office. And also, I think having a shared challenge, right? I mean, people always bond over shared experiences. This is one of the reasons why companies, invest a lot in sending their managers out to, do crazy things like climb ropes, right? It's to give them a shared challenge. Well, now we've got a massive shared challenge. And it, so far it appears as though, at least in a lot of organizations, the people are rising to that challenge and that it's serving as a shared experience that is bonding people.
And Stuart, we're almost out of time here. I guess the question is just how to sustain that interest and enthusiasm.
That's such an important question, Marty. The more we can focus on what it is that we're trying to do together to make it a better world. My first granddaughter was born in New York City less than a week ago.
Wow.
And I've been thinking a lot about her. I have not met her yet, unfortunately, in person. A lot of FaceTime, but no holding. And I think about the world that she is going to be, creating her generation. And my hope is that that the experience of this pandemic helps humanity to see our shared sense of purpose and how we can help to combat, the many, many challenges that we face together.
Stuart, I hate to do this. We got to leave it there. Yeah, they're playing my song. We got to leave it there. Stuart Friedman, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times. Congratulations on your new grandchild. Barbara Larson, thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
Yeah, a pleasure for
Thanks
us
so
as
much.
Well. You're welcome. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thanks for joining us.